accession number 13360, Major D. Tomlinson, Reel 7.
Major D. Tomlinson, Reel 7. You are now an adjutant, Major. Specifically are the duties of an adjutant?
Adjutant, looking after the CO, and of course it involves all the paperwork to do the organisation of the battalion. Battalion orders. I'm a pity I haven't got any of this stuff. I just played through it all. Duties, you know, and all sort of things that have to be done, and everything has to be done on orders. You're not fighting much, ever. He was doing anything but fighting. Fighting is a very minute part of one's duties, as you know. But I had a 1500 weight, or my clerk did, had the 1500 weight truck. In which he carried all the stuff for the paper stuff for issuing orders and instructions. And of course I had asylum.
When you came back from your course to rejoin the battalion, did you become adjutant straight away, or was there some time spell, some period before you did?
That isn't straight away.
And the commanding officer...
Eardley Wilmot had been there. Remember Eardley Wilmot, dear? Hell of a nice fella. He was the permanent, almost semi-permanent adjutant until he was promoted, you see. He couldn't get any further than captain as an adjutant. And then he was given a company and a majority. And of course, poor lad was killed. But he was a regular soldier.
Did you get your third pip, captain, when you took over as adjutant?
No. I was very fortunate to be given it when I was still IO, which is unusual. But don't ask me who gave it me. I can't remember.
Who was commanding the battalion when you came back to it as adjutant?
Sammy Batherskin sent me off on course. And then there was a battle, and he was captured. So I didn't see him again. So we had a friend.
That'd be Colonel Watson.
Bill Watson, yeah. Because he was second in command. Took over the command of the battalion, and when I came back off the course, I found that Bill Watson was there.
Was he an easy man to work with as commanding officer?
not really. No. Everybody's easy if you treat them right. You know? I got on well with we got on well with each other because we understood each other. We're not the same ilk by any means. We're both different personalities. But, of course, as an army man, you learn to obey orders, don't you? But he knew that I'd been with the battalion now some time, from one pit subaltern through captaincy to captaincy. So it was not new to him. And he wasn't new to me. I knew him. Yes. We had differences of opinion, of course, but I always had to do what he said. And I'd have my say first. If he didn't like it or wanted to change it, it was all right.
Where was the battalion when you rejoined them from your course?
I'm still trying to think.
Right.
But when doing the course in Palestine, where I was taught adjutant duties, I rejoined the battalion in the Delta. And they'd been on a skirmish, and that is when a whole collection of them were captured. That was when Colonel Bannerscombe was captured. But it was almost something in the Delta, it was just reforming, really. They were sent out at Alamein to, as a special unit, to reinforce a weakness that had appeared.
Whereabouts did you first go into the Alamein line?
Yes, we were drafted to the southern end of the Alamein line. So north of Bir Hakeim, right? You remember? Bir Hakeim, I think it was just north of that. Turned around there, didn't it?
The Qatara Depression.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's it. And then, as you recall, we were moved up. Into the line itself, north of where we'd been, and we ran into a band of Italians. On the way.
The attack that you put in to open the corridor, what are your memories of that? That was a brigade action.
It was a brigade attack, wasn't it? Yeah. Which is what? What was the question?
The November 1st, 2nd attack, brigade attack through the corridor. Have you any memories of that?
No, I'm really not clear at all at that juncture.
Following that, the battalion became involved in really following up what was going on ahead of you until you got to Benghazi.
That's right. The mobile troops were took over, and the fighting was all on the run. But we weren't involved. Our tanks and such like. Until we got to... what sort of date were we there at Benghazi? Was it Christmas then? That's it. That's when we organized the Christmas lunch on petrol tin tables. Now, the CO wasn't there because the second in command, or Dick Overton, was commanding the battalion at that time. Now, I don't know where he was. Perhaps he was on a course, I don't know. But he wasn't commanding, Dick Overton was commanding the battalion at that time. That I remember quite distinctly. And I was, being adjutant, I was involved with the administration of the battalion Christmas lunch festivities, you know. That's how I got, I was involved with that. And I was on duty at that time. Well, obviously, because I was seeing to do it.
No. The morale of the battalion must have been quite high. Now you're winning.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, that must be true. Yeah, it was. And we were left with mainly Italian troops too. There's only some small nucleus of rear guard Germans.
You moved from Benghazi ultimately through into Tunisia and Marath, which was the next big battle that you were in. What are your memories of that?
Well, the Marath line. Well, this of course was was made by the French. Facing east. Guarding Tunisia, really. And but it was a good strong position for defense, and the Germans fortified it, filled it with defenders. And there were some very fierce battles in this Wadi Akarit Marath area. First one was at Wadi Akarit, I think, before we moved to Marath.
When you went in at Marath itself, what's the role of the adjutant in the battle situation?
Well, I was with the CO, fighting troops and companies were under their orders, and we, with the CO and his headquarters, followed up at a convenient distance, of course. But we eventually, of course, got involved at Nara. Because the front troops were chased back onto the wadi itself, and this is where battalion headquarters were. And the enemy broke through there, and we were sort of facing them gun for gun. That I picked up a rifle myself. I mean, I think Colonel did too. And we were prepared to fight the Germans with a rifle fire. But somehow or other it got stopped. The Germans stopped coming forward.
This was a very difficult battle, wasn't it?
Oh, it was indeed. Very, very difficult. The line, which was made by the French, was saying, of course, facing the other way for a defending point of view. So you couldn't take up attacking positions because you were facing the wrong way. But we were dug in there with as battalion headquarters, which had been dug by the enemy, and we were sheltered because we were facing the other way. But then this fire started coming at us, and kept. We didn't get hit because we were sheltered and under cover. But we had to get out and move down to the wadi itself, because there was infantry, enemy infantry, and if we didn't move, we would sort of a very high percentage of trouble in being taken prisoner or killed. So we were out and moved down into the wadi itself, and lined the wadi where we took up positions that we could at least cover the Germans' advance, although willy-nilly as it was, but at least we could get arms at them, facing them. And well, I think that night was falling at that time, which was rather a help to us. And the enemy advancing, they must have been recouping. And it ceased to come forward anymore. It gave us a bit of breathing space.
How do you...
But we couldn't move. I then tried, or did, move the wireless. We got the wireless was with us, and the wireless operators. It was a very difficult battle. I got hit, but not in the body. I got hit in the equipment. In my equipment, I was hit by shellfire or gunfire. But I felt we should get out, because we were only going to be either killed or captured. And we couldn't do anything constructive. So I thought the best thing was to retreat to a safer position.
How do you retain control of things under such situations?
You can't. You had to use your common sense and your own initiative. There was a company sergeant major with me, and a wireless operator, and we collected. This is when I lost the CO. Because we retreated across the wadi and up the other side with an effort to get the wireless going in position, but the CO didn't follow. I don't know what happened to him, I don't know, but I don't know where he went. But he went somewhere and I went on a different route to me. I don't know what happened to him.
Does the CO in a battle situation like that try to operate through the adjutant, or has he direct control?
No, he... In a battle situation, you can't operate through anybody. You've got to be done by the situation and the people who make their own decisions, whatever they may be. And as you know, history shows that all sorts of decisions were made by all sorts of ranks of people. But that's it. Well, you can't rely on any concerted decisions. I think that's what's been the strength of the British Army. We've had people capable of making decisions where the Germans never did. They were always sat around waiting for somebody to give them orders. But I know I'm a bit cynical about that, but it is perfectly true.
There must have been great fear. There's a lot of bullets, shells flying around.
There's great fear. Our name was up and our time had come. And we picked up a rifle from somebody who'd been shot, the dead man's rifle, and picked it up and we were prepared to use it in defense of ourselves, you know.
What are the results upon you personally after a battle of extreme danger and extreme stress? When you know you're out and you're safe, what happens to you?
Well, to be fair, one must have the first sort of feeling of thankfulness that you have survived. It's a sort of survival note that comes to fore.
Well, the fact that as officers you had responsibilities and duties meant that you could cope with this situation because you had to get on with what you were doing. Did that help?
Not really. Actions were taken completely on a personal basis. There's no effort made in concert at all in a battle. And often it's, of course, you've got a gathering of troops with automatic weapons and organized, but when you are being pushed around and beaten by around my bullets and things, nobody can make a decision about anything. It's a matter of survival, really.
Is this where training comes in to be so important?
Oh, I think so, yes. Training not... I shouldn't right to say so, but training of survival and not to panic. That's what you try to prevent in yourself and in others.
Did you see panic around you?
Oh yes, there's always a certain amount of people who became panicky. But it was generally that if they were left on their own or by a few people, collection of people, you didn't get that sort of panicky condition because people felt able to look after themselves. But when they're on their own, in the main, they were tended to get panicky. Not always, but of course, some of them was quite the opposite. But I don't really know what to say. You can go on talking for hours about it, but don't really get anywhere.
As adjutant, after the battle, there were obviously a large number of casualties, people to be informed, lists to be made. Was this part of your duties? Casualty lists, letters home, who organised that?
Well, yes, I had some part of that, but it wasn't as if it was all organized as such.
Did you draw up casualty lists as adjutant?
No, not as such. I didn't. see, now you ask me, I don't know how it was done. On an individual note, I did, officers who were killed in the unit, I did have to write to their next of kin and send home their belongings.
Was that a particularly emotional and difficult task?
Yes, it was. It was. Especially if you knew them well. The one Jimmy Chapman I knew, he was a Scot. And he was wounded in the Sicily, battle of landing in Sicily. But I had to send all his belongings back to his